Good morning, counsel.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Rebecca Smith and I represent the Appellants Native Ecosystems Council and Alliance for the Wild Rockies.
All right.
We have essentially two issues on appeal today before the court. The first issue is the Forest Service's failure to address the riparian management objectives in its analysis of the East Deer Lodge project. The second issue is the Forest Service's failure to abide by its own scientific reports when it implemented the Forest Plan SNAG habitat standard. So I'll first begin by addressing the project-specific challenge, which is the agency's failure to address the riparian management objective and riparian conservation area standard. In response to something that the agency had raised in its answer brief, they had argued that at the NEPA level, the Forest Service doesn't need to address in an EIS whether it's complying with its own forest plan requirements. And so even though the case law is clear, the statute is clear, that a project must be consistent with a forest plan, there is actually a specific NEPA regulation that says you do need to address in the EIS whether a project is consistent with land use planning objectives.
I read it a little differently. Right at this intersection. I read their brief to be saying we don't have to show our work, coupled with the fact that I think they're right, that their project presupposes that not all of the, what I'm going to call them conservation, riparian conservation areas, were in compliance. Because they talked about some where streams are in compliance, we'll be doing one thing. Where we're not meeting or exceeding expectations, we'll be doing something else. So given that that's baked in, that they weren't across the board in compliance, is it your position that they have to show how they determined that?
Yes, Your Honor, because that's what the forest plan says they have to do. The forest plan says any activity in a riparian conservation area must either meet or exceed the riparian management objectives, and then there's a list of quantified objectives. And so the Forest Service just skipped over that step.
I don't think they did. This is what I'm trying to get at. I'm not sure they necessarily did. I read their response and their plan to project description to presuppose the determination that they weren't all in compliance. I mean, if they'd taken the position that everything's in compliance and none of these activities are going to have any impact, that'd be one thing. But I don't think they do that.
And well, Your Honor, that's the purpose of NEPA, is not just for the agency to inform itself. And so that's where the public part comes in. The purpose of NEPA is for the agency to inform the public of what it's doing. And so that is the part where they do have to show their homework. And
well, but then we get to what did you really ask them? So I'm trying to get into this iterative process back and forth, and it just seems the briefing to me seemed to kind of sail right past each other on these points.
So, Your Honor, that would be the exhaustion argument that they made, and I will tell you precisely.
Not an exhaustion argument. It's a waiver argument. It has to do with specificity of the objection or comments that you're waiving, as opposed to exhaustion, or at least it would be really helpful to me if you could keep those apart, maybe address them both if you want to address the exhaustion.
And so the statutes and regulation they cite are all exhaustion. Exhaustion.
The briefing, of course, and they're talking about the specificity of what you
right.
really asked.
And so when we address exhaustion in terms of what the specificity needs to be, we have to look at this court's precedent in, for example, Idaho Sporting Congress versus Rittenhouse, Native Ecosystems Council versus Dombeck, and those cases repeatedly say that a member of the public doesn't have to address it with the specificity that an attorney would when they present a refined legal argument. And so bringing up the subject matter is sufficient, and I want to point the court to where the plaintiffs did in fact do that. FER 8, they said, please disclose the results of up-to-date monitoring of fish habitat and watershed conditions as required by the forest plan. Now, the only place in the forest plan that requires up-to-date monitoring of fish habitat is the riparian management objective and riparian conservation area standard. So while it is
true. So where is it required in the forest plan? I mean, the comment seems to be to suggest, okay, the forest plan has this requirement to disclose. And I looked at the forest plan and I couldn't find it.
Your Honor, the forest plan standard is the riparian conservation area standard.
So I look at that. I'm looking at it right now. What exactly there requires publication of what Judge Christian accurately applied or described as their work?
So, Your Honor, at ER 407, if we look where it says activities in riparian conservation areas that are not meeting the Riparian Management Act objectives shall include a restoration component that is commensurate with the scope of activity affecting the fisheries. So basically, we need to know what the condition is before we can propose a solution.
But their main point is that this isn't a project that's aimed at restoration of the waters, and it's not a project they think is going to have a material effect on the waters, and so acting like it's aimed at accomplishing something that really isn't the aim, it puzzles me.
Well, Your Honor, the problem is that they're creating a solution before they know what the problem is. The forest plan codified these six quantitative riparian management objectives, and they say you have to determine, for example, do pool frequency meet the width and number of pools, 10 to 96, 20 to 56, et cetera? Are the large woody debris over 20 pieces per mile? Is the bank stability over 80% stable? Is the lower bank angle over 75%? Is the width to depth ratio less than 10? What is the water temperature? These are supposed to be the diagnostic tools that the agency uses to determine then in the riparian conservation area standard what activities would be commensurate with the need to improve the condition. So they have to look at the objectives, compare it to the existing condition to determine whether or not they're meeting the objectives, and then if they are not, they have to propose an activity that responds to that specific objective. And so that's why coming up with generic restoration ideas randomly spread throughout the project area doesn't meet this, because this...
Forgive me, but you just said something. Sometimes it sounds in your briefing like you don't know which streams are meeting or exceeding.
Yes, Your Honor. So, we do not.
Sometimes it sounds like that's your problem, and sometimes it sounds like your objection really is that they didn't show their work, as I put it, in showing how they were going to, in areas where they were falling, where the conditions were falling short, that they were going to improve. And I really can't tell which it is you were getting at the agency level.
Yes, Your Honor. The very first thing that the problem is that they have not compared the existing conditions to these objectives. So that means we don't know whether they're meeting these objectives.
The very first thing I mentioned was something different, so now you're confusing me. The very first thing I mentioned is it seems to me sometimes you're arguing that you don't know which streams in this project area were not in compliance.
Yes.
Okay, so it's just notable to me because this feels like a real moving target. Of course, we're always trying to reinvent, you know, that's the nature of our job, what happened below. But this is not how the district court described the challenge at all.
That's correct, Your Honor. The district court looked at it as a generalized NEPA claim, and the district court basically said because they took a hard look at water quality in general, because the project in general is designed for restoration, that's good enough. And the district court... Because the district court, like the plaintiffs and like the defendants, can't point to anywhere in the record where the agency actually did disclose the riparian management objectives and determine whether or not each stream met them.
On page 23, the district court's order said, plaintiffs alleged two specific defaults. One, the Forest Service didn't evaluate the condition of each stream within the project area according to the plan standards. Excuse me. Two, the Forest Service unlawfully failed to disclose something very specific, the numeric maximum daily load for sediment in Peterson Creek.
That's a different claim that's not on appeal.
This is not on appeal?
The second one you mentioned.
Okay, so I don't need to worry about that.
Yes.
So then, that's a relief. Okay, so go back to the way the judge describes this, your challenge. Didn't evaluate the condition of each stream within the project area according to the forest plan standards. Does he have that right?
Let me just pull that language up. You're reading from page 23, is that right?
Right.
Yes, Yes, Your Honor, that is the correct NIFMA claim.
Okay, so then on 31, which is your reply brief, it says the references, I think you mean your objections, do not specifically cite to the Forest Plan RCA standard, and I don't think they do mention the RCA standard. The conservation groups clearly express concern with water quality and fish habitat, including a concern that the Forest Service was not disclosing sufficient information to properly assess the impacts. This is your argument?
So your question is, does the specific comment that they raised, is that akin to, or is that similar enough to how the district court characterized the claim?
I think even your briefing acknowledges that the comments that you raised, the objections that were raised, really didn't put this fine point on it about the riparian conservation areas being in compliance with the management objectives. Is that right?
No, Your Honor. If we could look at the FER 8, they raised the question, please disclose the results of up-to-date monitoring of fish habitat and watershed conditions. Those conditions are the riparian management objectives.
Okay, so this your reply brief says that we didn't reference the Forest Plan RCA standard.
It was not specifically cited, that's correct, in the comments. Okay. And that's why I would point the court back to the Rittenhouse and Dombeck opinions, where this court has said you do not have to specifically cite the forest plan requirements. So in the Rittenhouse case, the plaintiffs had raised questions about old growth species and concerns about old growth species. The forest plan had a specific standard that said you must monitor the population trends of old growth species. And the Forest Service in that case as well said, well, they didn't say in their comments that they must monitor the population trends of old growth species as required by the forest plan. And this court said, but it's clear to us that their concern was old growth species. They don't need to specifically use the language of the forest plan or say it's the forest plan standard in order to preserve their right to bring a claim before the court.
It seems to me it'd be one thing if the agency had denied that they were out of compliance. I mean, if they had begun from a premise where all the streams were in compliance with the management objectives, you would have a different circumstance here. But I read their project plan to be clear that some of the streams aren't.
We don't know that, Your Honor.
And so my first question is, do you agree with that? And the second, that some of them weren't, because it talks about in areas where they aren't, we're going to meet or exceed, we're going to do this, and where they do meet or exceed, we're going to do that. And then this circles back to I just want to give you one more chance to tell me, where does it say they have to tell you how they decided which streams were or were not?
Well, Your Honor, I would point to the two district court opinions from the District of Oregon and District of Idaho that already addressed this exact issue and said they do have to address riparian management objectives. And my response directly to you is they don't specifically say, here are the streams that do not address riparian, do not meet their riparian management objectives. They don't even address it. So for five out of the six
different... don't identify them?
They don't disclose them, and they don't compare the existing conditions. So there could be...
And you're, just to be clear, because you just... I just want to make sure that your briefing is not clear on this point by my read, and maybe my shortcoming, but your challenge is that they were required to identify which streams and talk about how they had made the measurement. Is that right?
Yes, Your Honor. For any riparian conservation area where there is any activity at all, the forest plan requires them to say whether they meet or exceed the riparian management objectives. They did not disclose and comply and compare.
I think they did that. That's my.
And I don't see in their analysis anywhere, for example, where they addressed temperature, bank stability, and the.
So, right, and your argument is that the conclusion is not enough. You wanted to see the.
Yes, because the analysis is what shows us where and what type of remediation activities. And so we don't know if there's even more streams out there. For example, something they didn't address, bank stability. What if there are a number of other streams out there that don't meet the bank stability riparian management objectives, but they've just been swept under the rug because the agency didn't do that analysis
but
yet?
This isn't a project that's aimed at that.
You're
right. And that's... what I thought the point the district court made is that if you have a project that's aimed at addressing that ill, you specifically address that ill. If you have a project that you don't think that is aimed at something else, you evaluate whether it's going to, what kind of impact it's going to have. And I don't understand why that requires the kind of detail analysis you're assisting, that a project about the disease was. But anyway, the tree disease necessarily means analyzing each of the streams that runs through.
Because commercial logging affects and degrades our stream habitats. And this is a project with hundreds and hundreds of acres of commercial logging, with log hauling over 100 miles of roads. And that's why we have to look at the plain language of the forest plan itself, which says any activity requires this analysis. It doesn't matter if the Forest Service says these are restorative.
Stop. Let's look at the forest plan, because you're taking this analysis to mean something that I haven't seen specified in the forest plan. So show me where the analysis you're talking about is something that Standard 1 requires.
Standard 1 says any activity in riparian conservation areas shall be designed to enhance, restore, or maintain the characteristics of the RCA by implementing the following requirements. And then A, B, and C say, A, for example, activities in riparian conservation areas that meet or exceed riparian management objectives must be designed to maintain existing stream function. Activities in riparian conservation areas that are not meeting the riparian management objectives shall include a restoration component commensurate with the scope of activity affecting the fishery, which trends towards accomplishing desired stream function. So the only way we can know whether these areas are meeting the riparian management objectives if we have an analysis. And so for five out of these six factors, pool frequency, large woody debris, bank stability, lower bank angle, and water temperature, we don't know if the streams are complying with these objectives or not. And
so the district court says that the Forest Service didn't authorize timber cutting in riparian areas, and the only actions that are authorized are what the district court describes as restorative in nature. If that's the case, why isn't that enough?
Well, Your Honor, that's false. There is timber cutting that is going to occur. We provided this.
Well, telling me there's timber cutting doesn't tell me that statement is false. What evidence do you have that, in fact, there is timber cutting that's been authorized in riparian areas?
ER 217 to 218 says there will be tree felling within riparian habitat in the Dry Cottonwood subwatershed, the Girard Gulch subwatershed, the Orofino subwatershed, and the Sand Hollow subwatershed, and the Peterson subwatershed.
The other half of the district court statement goes on to talk about the net benefit, basically. I'm summarizing unfairly,
yes.
But do you want to address that?
Yes, and that is that we don't actually know what the net benefit is in relation to those five riparian management objectives that they didn't address. So we don't know how these will address bank stability, large woody debris, because they weren't addressed in the EIS. So we don't have the analysis yet to know if they're truly restorative. We don't even know which streams are not meeting those five out of the six riparian management. I see that my time is running down, and I just wanted to see if the court also had any questions on our other claim, which was the snag habitat standard regarding the averaging over the analysis area, or also completely failing to address the 10-inch snags.
It appears not. Thank you, counsel.
I'd like to reserve my remaining time for rebuttal.
Good morning. May it please the court, Emily Polachek on behalf of the federal defendants. The East Deer Lodge project is a cooperative plan to address the impacts that have happened in the East Deer Lodge Valley Management Area, mostly due to the mountain pine bark beetle epidemic. I'd like to turn, since the court has had a lot of questions about the riparian conservation area standard, both Judge Clifton and Judge Kristen have this correct. And the issue here is that plaintiffs are misreading the RCA standard. What the RCA standard is intended to do is to address impacts in the riparian conservation areas when there is a project activity that is going to affect those areas in some way. So if in this case there were commercial logging that were happening in the riparian conservation areas, then the Forest Service would be required to analyze the impacts of that, the commercial timber logging, and then make sure that the affected areas are either already meeting the RMOs, or that if they are not meeting the RMOs, that restorative measures accompany the commercial project. Here, there's no commercial logging that is happening in the riparian areas. The only thing that's happening is tree felling.
Well, let me stop
felling.
You there, because we just had
right.
a factual question there, and I confess I'm sufficiently lost, so I can't answer the question.
Oh,
so
it.
Please address specifically what we just heard.
Sure. So there is a difference between commercial timber harvest and the tree felling that is happening in this case, and that's described in the project EIS quite extensively.
But I don't think in the judge's order, which is what we're getting hooked
that's,
up on.
That could
I
be.
Think he just used a bit of a shorthand, right? So could you
sure.
walk us through that? I think he said,
yes.
Did he say timber cutting?
I think tree felling is the technical term
no,
for it.
No, I'm talking about the judge's order. We got to do this. Remember,
sure.
we're just appellate court judges, so we have to take this slow. A time, please. And I think the judge's order is where he's using a shorthand. He's not using that language. And I think Judge Clifton and I don't want to speak to Judge Clifton, but I think we might be having the same problem. Didn't he say in the order that the project doesn't authorize timber cutting?
Correct.
Okay.
And that's literally true, you're telling us.
Right. So that's there's no contract with a timber company to take the trees from riparian conservation areas and sell them. That's
there's
not
something
happening.
Else that is going
right.
on. In
so there's tree felling. And what that is it's actually a restorative measure. It's meant to help the RMOs. So they go in by hand and will fell the trees by hand, not with any mechanical operations. And when they fell the trees, they can use them to restore the areas in certain ways. One way is that they create worm log fencing, so they fell those trees and then they put up fences along the bank so that the livestock can't get so close and they cause the bank to kind of erode, which then increases stream sedimentation temperature. The other thing that they can do is they fell the trees and let them just fall across the stream. And what that does is it creates pools in the stream. So it slows the current, and those pools are used by the fish as spawning grounds. They like
okay,
to.
But maybe somebody who's not as familiar as you are would think, oh, that's going to create a sediment problem. Maybe. So where do we go to look for to connect these dots?
Sure. There are quite a few places in both the project FEIS, and then there was also a hydrology report done for the project. So I direct the court at the supplemental excerpts of records, pages 307 to 319.
Okay.
That's the project, the final environmental impact study, which walks through each of the sub-watersheds that are affected by that lie within the project area, and it lays out like the specific creeks within each of those sub-watersheds. Also at 399 to 415, again, that's in the biological evaluation portion of the FEIS. And then 433 to 439, and I believe that's the hydrology report. There was also a hydrology report done in 2008 when the forest plan was amended, and that is found at supplemental excerpts of record 726 to 734.
Okay.
So, I mean, this is, you know, an incredibly extensive discussion of what was happening in the stream, in the watersheds, and that was responsive to what plaintiffs had asked for. They asked to know about the watershed conditions, and so the Forest Service explained exactly what happened, or what was happening in the watersheds. Plaintiffs did not. What they are asking for here is they are asking for a specific statement as to whether or not each of these creeks and various riparian areas is meeting or falling short of the RMOs.
Right. That's what they're asking.
Right. There is not a specific statement that would say this creek meets, this creek does not meet. Instead, there is a general discussion about the conditions that encompasses each of the RMOs within the FEIS.
Opposing counsel's argument is that you're required by our case law to make that showing. What's your response?
Right. There's nothing in the forest plan standard that would require that. And that's particularly important here because the only thing that is happening in these riparian conservation areas are measures specifically intended to restore and benefit the RCAs. And I'd point again to the language of the RCA, which says that any activity in RCAs shall be designed to enhance, restore, or maintain the physical and biological characteristics of the RCA. That's exactly what the Forest Service is doing here. They are undertaking activities that are only restorative in nature, that are not meant for any sort of timber harvest.
How do we know that?
It's stated in the FEIS. They state that there is no commercial treatments are happening within the RCAs other than restorative.
So your position is that it's enough for the agency to apply its expertise and make the judgment, or as Judge Christian said earlier, state its conclusion, and it's not required to go through this, whatever, six standards and measure this and measure that for each of the areas, that for this purpose, the more generic expertise is sufficient to satisfy the standard.
Yes, I'm not sure that this is an instance when we are deferring the agency expertise. This is a factual matter that these actions are not the actions of, you know, like where they contract with a timber company.
Somebody else comes in and says, look, just the felling of the trees creating pools in the long run has a deleterious effect because it impacts, and I couldn't begin to say what because I don't know any hydrology. But at what point is it enough for the agency to state its opinion as opposed to gather the data that would confirm that, in fact, that it's not going to have a deleterious effect?
Well, it did do that. I mean, it discussed what was happening in these subwater sheds.
It did do what? It showed its work?
I'm sorry. It did discuss exactly what the effects of the hand felling and other activities were going to be.
These SER references you've given us?
Exactly. They're walking through exactly, you know, what they're going to do in those areas and what the expected effect will be.
But they're stating that conclusion not based on measuring before and measuring after or anything else. They're just saying, we know that felling the trees in this manner or creating the wormhole or whatever fence you described has the effect of keeping the grazing animals from causing the banks to erode and so forth. That is sufficient, under your view, to satisfy this standard.
Yes, it is, but I'd also say there are quite a few measurements that appear. Okay. They are just not measurements that happened for this specific project. So they're referring back to
the plaintiff is arguing, look, they got these six measures, and you got to do it for each stream and so on and so forth, and you're saying no. And so I'm trying to find, okay, what's the point of conflict, and what is the standard that explains whether or not A is sufficient or you're required to do B?
Yeah. And again, okay, so I would encourage the court to look at those sites that I gave because I think you'll see that there are quite a few measurements that happen. They use something called the Rosgren measurements for stream viability, which appear in there.
Just lawyers, you know.
Oh, I know. Trust me, I know.
Is your answer to Judge Clifton's question that even if they had asked these questions or raised these objections very specifically, show us that the conditions meet the RMOs, would your answer have been, okay, we'll show you our work, or would it have been, we don't have to show you our work, or would it have been, or are you saying, we don't have to do a stream-by-stream analysis? I'm trying to figure out whether you did it and haven't disclosed it, as opposed to, it's sort of sounding now like you're saying you don't have to have done that stream-by-stream.
Well, so they did a stream-by-stream analysis. I guess maybe I'm confused about what plaintiffs want here. I read it as they want a specific statement that says, this is what this stream is or is not meeting this RMO,
right?
Period.
So now I'm trying to just focus on your position. Is your position that the stream-by-stream analysis was done and it may not have been disclosed with the level of specificity that the plaintiffs want, but it was done? That's option A.
Yes.
Option B is we don't have to have done that stream-by-stream analysis because this project was doing something else.
Honestly, it's both. They did not have to do the stream-by-stream analysis because if you look at standard 1B, it says that that even if the streams were not meeting the RMOs, the standard is met so long as there's a restorative component included in the measure. And the bit about commensurate with the scope of activity doesn't apply because there is no, you know,
commercial activity.
Exactly, happening. So they have met with the standard regardless, just by the mere fact that the only actions occurring here are restorative in nature.
Do you think I'm right to read, and I may not be, so this is a genuine invitation to correct me if I'm wrong, to read your project description as conceding that some of the streams were not in compliance with riparian management objectives?
I think that that's a fair description. I think especially looking back at the 2008 hydrology report that was done back in the when the forest plan was amended, there was a statement there that most are meeting, or that there is a desire to get them in a more closer to the desired functioning condition, I think is the language that's used in the hydrology report, which I think makes a fair assumption that there are watersheds that are not
in compliance.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And the point of this project, I mean, as far as the riparian areas are concerned, was to increase those. You know, they do the hand felling, creating the worm fencing, creating more pool frequency. That also lowers water temperature. And then additionally, sedimentation is not an RMO, but the EIS discusses sedimentation in great detail because there are some temporary haul roads that have the potential to increase sedimentation. So not only have they addressed how they're going to use best management principles to reduce any potential sedimentation, but the Forest Service is going further than that and actually decommissioning several miles of roads along the riparian areas, and they're updating about a dozen culverts to help with that.
We should read it, I'm understanding your position to be that we should read the district court's order, which may be a little bit of a shorthand, to refer to only commercial timber cutting. Is that right? There wasn't going to be any commercial timber cutting in the riparian conservation areas?
Yeah, when you hear timber, it's usually a reference to commercial. It's very...
Okay, not on the Ninth Circuit necessarily. This is sort of lingo that we're needing you to help give us some, I think, background for. So where's the requirement? What's the support for the requirement that this timber cutting, which to me means cutting down a tree, whether it's done commercially or not, you're telling me that there's a very meaningful distinction where you do have to make the disclosure on one hand and not on the other. Can you please just give me that authority?
I don't have an authority for that. I think that the idea is that that would be an activity under an activity that requires compliance with NIFMA and NEPA generally, and therefore it would trigger all of the necessities.
Why aren't they both activities? They're activities pursuant to the project.
Yes, but they're considered, they're only there for restorative measures. They are not the activity that the contractor has sought permission for, in essence. That it's not the Forest Service is not authorizing a timber sale there.
No, but they're authorizing somebody's going to come in and cut down this deadwood that the beetles have killed, right?
Right, and that's happening not on riparian conservation areas.
Thank you.
If there are any questions about the snags?
Appears not.
Okay. Thank you. We'd ask that the court affirm the district court.
Thank you, counsel. Rebuttal?
I wanted to provide a little bit better response to Judge Kristen's question about, you asked about where is the requirement basically that they have to sort of do this analysis and disclose the analysis to the public. Why would they have to show their homework, sort of, was the idea of the question, I think. And I guess I would point the court to Native Ecosystems Council v. U.S. Forest Service, which is 418 Fed 3rd at 961, as well as Happner v. Tidwell, which is...
So aren't those cases pretty specific as to the questions asked?
Your Honor, I can speak to the specificity of both of those cases. In Happner v. Tidwell, the issue was there was a quantitative forest plan requirement regarding elk hiding cover. The Forest Service didn't address hiding cover in the way that the forest plan defined it, but then still said we're complying with our forest plan. And so this court said you have to actually analyze hiding cover the way it's defined in the forest plan, and because you didn't do that, we can't tell whether you're complying with the forest plan or not. And that was the same thing in Native Ecosystems Council v. U.S. Forest Service, where there was another sort of quantitative standard to preserve elk hiding cover, and the Forest Service had given various calculations of how it was going to comply with that standard, but they never actually did that in a clear way in the record. And this court ultimately said, while they're giving us a bunch of different calculations on appeal, we don't see in the record where they actually applied the standards as it's written in the forest plan. And so both of those do address that question. And unless there's any further questions, we would ask that you reverse the district court. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, counsel. Thank you to both counsel for your helpful argument in this case. The case just argued is submitted for decision by the court. That completes our calendar for today. We are in recess until 9 a.m. tomorrow morning.